We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're barreling towards March. Regular season for most folks ends in 9 days or so. Talking women's hoops on the Friday edition of CSN. And, well, we got a special guest right now. Megan Gower is in the Big Easy starting some bachelorette party shenanigans. So if you're cruising down Bourbon Street later tonight, you hear someone screaming at anyone who will listen that Iowa's defense, it's a hindrance. Lucy Olson is underappreciated. Or if you just see someone berating a bartender to put the TV on the Pac-12 network because USC is playing Colorado, go say hi to Megan Gower. She's off having a great time. Mercifully, you're not just going to hear me ramble for the next 45 minutes to an hour. Special guest, co-host of the Coast to Coast podcast on her hoop stats, Illinois State Redbird aficionado, Calvin Wetzel. Calvin, welcome to the show. How are you?
Appreciate you having me, Rob. I have to say, you described Megan Gower perfectly. I'm going to do my best to fill in, but that is exactly what Megan's going to be doing tonight, I'm sure. I'm glad to be on. I love listening to you guys on the pod, so it's going to be fun.
You understand the shoes you have to fill, because when we were talking earlier this week, like, Megan knows everything. She doesn't have to prep too much for her. I have lots of notes in front of me because I'm just trying to keep up. Lots to get to. We'll recap the games that have happened this week. We're going to get a reset of sorts. Conference races mostly coming down to the wire, unless you follow the SEC or the Big East. And everywhere I look, a team on the bubble is losing because, it's late February and these games matter and things are great. Calvin, where do you want to begin? I guess we'll probably start last night. The big result, Indiana finally gets a marquee victory at home over the Iowa Hawkeyes. Do you have any takeaways overall from Hoosiers' far and away biggest win of the year?
I do. You know, I know we talked beforehand how we weren't necessarily going to get into much of the film of it and things like that, but I have to tell you, I watched a little bit of the film this morning because, like you said, Illinois State fan. I was at the Illinois State game last night, got home in time to watch UCLA, didn't see this game. So I had to watch a little bit of the film. First thing I see, Indiana's throwing a little bit of a box and one at him. So I'm thinking, okay, Iowa, were you not ready for this? Because you had to know people were going to watch what Nebraska did in that fourth quarter to Iowa with the diamond and one, and what Maryland has done to Iowa in the past, that you're going to see this at some point. And I, granted, I've only watched a little bit of the film so far. I don't know exactly how they did the whole game against the box and one, but they scored 69 points. Iowa doesn't come up short of 70 very often, so obviously they didn't do that well against it. I don't know why I was not ready for this and how they can't figure out the box and one, but if I'm a tournament team, a team that's going to be facing them in the early rounds and really going to be heavy underdogs, 15 seed or even, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 in the second round, I'm starting to practice the box and one right now.
Fair enough. I mean, it's one of those nights, right? Caitlin Clark wasn't magnificent, 8 of 26 overall, 3 of 16 from beyond the arc, but you know, she's going to get hers. It's always pretty much been, can everyone else step up? Kate Martin, she had 19. She was 0 of 6 from beyond the arc. Everyone else, let me do some basic math here, 2 of, what, 15 or so? Maybe a little less than that. So it's always been, you know, sure, let Caitlin get 25. Let her get 30. Let her get 35. You can stop everyone else. You have a good chance of at least staying in the game with Iowa. And now that's 5 straight games they've allowed 80-plus. So you're talking about the offensive end. I'm worried about the defensive end because Iowa's never had a great defense, right? But you can get away with giving up 75. Heck, you can get away with scoring 80 on a lot of nights. You're just doing it all the time leaves you so susceptible, especially in a one-and-done scenario. One time, Caitlin Clark goes 3 of 16 from beyond the arc, and you don't get help from anyone else. That's all it takes in March.
Yeah, you said it, you know, and you can get away with giving up 80 if either one of those things happens. If Caitlin goes off for 45, you'll probably still be okay. Or if your supporting cast really steps up, maybe Hannah Stolke goes off for 47, like we saw one time, you're probably going to be okay. But on nights like last night, they hold Caitlin to 4 points in the second half, 24 overall, which is a great night for most players. For Caitlin, 24 is pretty big off night. Yeah. And you hold the supporting cast to, what'd you say, 2 for 17 from 3?
Or something. It, yeah, I'm bad at quick math. But yeah, everyone else hit 2 threes the entire night. And that's just not Iowa.
Yeah, it's not going to get it done. Your defense playing the way it is the last couple weeks. Now, I will say Iowa's defense before February this year, I think had actually been not great, but good enough.
Better. Yeah, better. I agree.
What they were. Yeah, I think they've gotten better every year that Caitlin's been there. And I think they were playing good enough defense for the first couple months of the season to carry their offense, what it is, you know, to the Final Four. But the last couple weeks, granted, tougher schedule offensively, they played Maryland, Penn State, 2 teams who can really push, get out and run, a lot more offensive teams. Obviously, going on the road to Indiana is a tough matchup. But what their defense has been the last couple weeks is not the same. And what their defense has been the last couple weeks is not good enough to get it done on nights when Caitlin isn't dropping 40 and your supporting cast is only hitting 2 threes. You can't have all of those happen on the same night.
Yeah, obviously, bet against her next month at your own peril. And it's, you know, it's fine to give up 93 to Penn State when you score 111. You know, it's fine to give up 89 to Michigan when you put up 106. It just takes one night. Indiana side, don't know what to make of this week for the Hoosiers. Looked so good last night. Now, they're undefeated at home, so they're a different animal at Assembly Hall. After Monday, a blowout loss at Illinois, a game they were never really in. They were, what, a 4 seed last week from the committee? I don't know what the committee does with them come next week, because this is as impressive a win as anyone's had all year, coming off a wildly uninspiring loss to a team that isn't going to make the tournament.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up that they're undefeated at home, because they were 4 seed and they're kind of on that bubble right now for 4 or 5, which is going to be a big deal for them. Because if you get that 4 seed, you get to play at home, where, like you said, they haven't lost. So this was a really, really, really big win for them. Obviously, that Illinois loss almost certainly would have knocked them off that host line and probably down to the 5 range. But this is the type of win that can vault you right back up into that top 16. Where they really want to be. I'm glad I'm not on the committee, because I don't know what to do with this week either. I do think the Illinois loss could end up being one of those blessings in disguises for them when you look back. I think that's the type of loss, because so far, up to that point this season, they had basically taken care of business. And actually, I got on a podcast that day, said that Indiana's taking care of business against every team that they should, and just hadn't beaten a top-tier team yet. And then, of course, by the time the podcast was out, that wasn't true anymore. They lost to Illinois by 20. But up to that point, they didn't have a loss like this. They had a beatdown to Stanford, beatdown to Iowa, but their losses were to these top-10 caliber teams. Then they go and lose the way they did to Illinois. I think that wakes something up inside of you when you realize we're vulnerable to teams that maybe we might face in the first weekend of the tournament. We need to make some adjustments here. And we saw it against Iowa. They showed up.
Yeah. Now I think they probably cancel each other out, right? Which for them, that's probably fine. If they don't move up, they don't move down. That's fine. You're still a top 16 team. Obviously, don't lose at Northwestern. win at home against Maryland and probably get to the championship game. Don't necessarily have to win. And you're probably all but wrapped up a top 16 seed, which is really the goal at this point, right? Right now, especially after last year, like I'm sure they want to go back home, undo that home loss last year to Miami in the second round. What are your thoughts on the black unis, by the way? I hated them.
Really? I kind of like them. I like the black uni. Not just theirs, actually, in general. I think when teams go to their alternate black unis, I think a lot of teams do it really well.
I think I saw something that the men are never going to wear them again because they lost big, but now Indiana, like, you got to keep them, right?
Yeah, even if they, you know, regardless of whether you like how they look or not, you win like that, you got to wear them again.
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, it carries on the road, it's black, and then you could just have another blackout at home senior day against Maryland and then go from there. So, with that, the Big Ten is comfortably, given how little time there is, Ohio State's, who continued Penn State's woes. I don't know if you caught any of this game. 13-0 basically out of the gate. It was like 17-2. Ohio State never threatened by a Penn State team that went from 16-5 and pretty firmly into the field. And now suddenly NCAA tournament's looking shaky. We can talk about the Ohio State side because this is a team I loved in the preseason. Thought that, you know, I put them in my Final Four in the preseason. They come out, they lose three games early on. People kind of write them off. They're hovering there, late teens. I don't know if they dropped as far as 20 in the rankings. And now here they are. They've won however many in a row. They're 23-3. And they're not just beating teams, they're killing teams.
Absolutely. This is a team that has completely flipped a switch. And Cody McMahon has flipped a switch. And I think she's someone who a lot of people like you who were high on them in the preseason, and I was too, really thought that Cody McMahon was going to take that sophomore leap after what we saw last year as a freshman. And then in the first couple months, she regressed, if anything, or at the very least, didn't really take that next step forward. And now we're seeing that. We're seeing her kind of figure it out here down the stretch of the season, which is amazing for Buckeye fans. Because to me, when you look at maybe just February or just late January and February, this is probably the team with the best chance to beat South Carolina. And I say that knowing that no one actually has a good chance to beat South Carolina. There's a huge gap. But if anyone, I think if you put South Carolina against every team in the country right now, who do I think has the best shot? Today, a month ago, I wouldn't have said this. I think it's Ohio State. I think they're playing phenomenal basketball. They deserve their AP number two ranking right now. And like you said, barring some sort of slip up here, the Big Ten is there. Really, the Big Ten is theirs outright. Even if they slip up, they should be able to get a share of the Big Ten at this point. They take care of business. The Big Ten is going to be theirs outright, and it might be theirs outright before they even play that game at Iowa, to finish the regular season, which was looking like it might be a game to determine the Big Ten champion. But now it's looking like Ohio State might wrap it up before that.
Yes, a game and a half lead with three to go. So if they beat Maryland this weekend, I think they'd wrap up a share, and that they play Maryland and Michigan at home the next two games. Given the way things have gone, you'd expect them to win both of those. And you're right. If that's the case, they go 2-0 in the next two games. That game at Carver-Hawkeye doesn't have quote-unquote implications in terms of Big Ten seeding or, you know, Ohio State, if they lose at Carver-Hawkeye, barring them losing by 35 points, they'll be in line for a one seed, you would imagine, heading to Minneapolis this year, Big Ten tournaments in Minneapolis. So the preseason Buckeyes finally looking the part and doing it at the right time of year. Again, Nittany Lions haven't made the tournament since 2014. They're 16-11 now after starting 16-5. And things are suddenly shaky for a Big Ten conference that, I don't know, Megan's the bracketologist. She knows better than me. Looking at like eight bids, like Ohio State, Iowa, Indiana in. Nebraska's probably in. Michigan State's probably in. I've been hard on Maryland all year. The Terps have done what they've needed to do. And then you have teams like Minnesota and Penn State and Michigan. Do you have any thoughts? You're more of a Big Ten guy than I am, especially with some of these smaller teams. Like, I don't know a whole lot about Nebraska, as we learned a couple weeks ago. Michigan State, Minnesota. Do you have any thoughts on these kind of mid-tier Big Ten teams that are tournament good, but they're just not, you know, they're not in the picture for a top 16?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Nebraska. You know, I agree with you that I think they're in. I'm surprised to hear you not say that you think they're a WNIT team, because last week on the pod, I heard you say that you were going to be Nebraska's villain. So I thought you'd come on here and put them in the WNIT.
Oh, that's right. At a cost. If I get swag, right. I will happily. So what did they do? That's right. I already forgot. Since I said they had no chance to beat Purdue, they beat them. No chance to beat Northwestern, beat them handily. Oh, Minnesota at home. Gophers going to come in and get that win. Keep it up, Nebraska. Keep it up. I'm, again, happy to be the resident hater as long as there's a payoff for me at the end when you're cutting down nets.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree with you, though. Nebraska's in. I think Minnesota team you brought up, that's the team that's in trouble here because Mara Braun looks like she's done for the year. You know, they haven't officially said that. Sophie Hart, same deal. Down two starters, and they have not looked good the last couple weeks without them. Hart just missed the last game, but without Perron especially. So I think this is a team that's been careening towards the bubble, and they're going to careen right past it. And this is a team I do think is actually going to end up, you know, Dawn Plitzewa has done a great job in year one, and I would love to see her get into the tournament. I think she's done a fantastic job, but I'm not sure if I see it. I think this team's in trouble with the injuries, and it's no one's fault. Injuries have been the story, unfortunately, across the country this year for a lot of teams, yep. And you hate to see it. But if there's going to be one of those eight teams that you mentioned who falls off the bubble on the wrong side of it, I think it's Minnesota.
Yeah, they've lost 7 of 8. The win was Northwestern last weekend. Like bad loss at Rutgers. They went 0-2 against Wisconsin in that stretch. They close at Nebraska, home to Iowa, at Penn State. Those are three difficult games, two on the road, and then obviously the Hawkeyes are the Hawkeyes. So a lot of work to do there. However, that's also three opportunities to improve your resume, albeit shorthanded. Michigan lost to Michigan State. I think that kind of knocks them out of the picture. And then again, just Penn State. So there's your Big Ten part of the conversation. The other conference that dominates Thursdays generally, ACC. Virginia Tech is suddenly looking like a team, kind of like last year, a lot like last year. They're kind of flying under the radar for a couple of months. And then February hits, and that duo of Kittley and Amore, they got that thing humming once again at the right time.
Yeah, I saw in the doc when you prepped me here that you asked who's the best team in the ACC, and I thought, you know, you could probably ask me every day of the week, and I might give you seven different answers.
Yeah.
But my answer today is going to be Virginia Tech. I'm going to agree with you on that. I think they're playing their best basketball at the right time here, and like you said, like last year, not quite the level of Ohio State, but a little bit similar in terms of some of those slip-ups early on, and now they're really clicking. I think Georgia Amore is a March player. I think Georgia Amore, we saw it last year, and I think we're going to see it again this year in her senior year, is going to be one of those players who, when you get into the tournament, teams aren't going to know how to stop her. That step back, it's nasty. So I would have NC State as a close second. I'm still not sure if I'm a believer in Louisville or not. They keep proving me wrong, so we'll see how they do. I know that's sort of been the top three for a while, but this is one of those conferences where the conference tournament, the 7 seed, the 8 seed, the 6 seed might just go win this thing because anybody can beat anybody.
Yeah, Duke starting last night was the 8 seed, or would have been if the tournament started yesterday. And they went to the Carrier, or the JMA Wireless Dome. Sorry, I can't call it that. The Carrier Dome. And dominated Syracuse from start to finish, and that game was never close. And they're the 8 seed. You're right. Would it shock me if they went on a run? Absolutely not. In terms of Virginia Tech, Amore is one of those players that I don't care if she's 11 of 12 shooting or 1 of 12 shooting. If you're down too late and the ball's in her hands, you just trust her. And there aren't that many players in the country who can say that. Obviously, Caitlin Clark, Amore's there. I think Haley Van Lith is largely there, like a March type player where, you know, if you need it, you're going to get it. Paige Beckers is probably there. It's a very short list. And then not
Juju
to mention
Watkins in there as well, although not that we've seen her in March yet, but from what we've seen, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you have the person who I think is a first team All-American and a 2-time national player, ACC player of the year, who like never gets talked about. And Elizabeth Kittley just goes out every night, especially during this 9-game win streak, and puts up like 23-15, 25-11, 30-14. And like no one talks about her, and she's phenomenal, and she's an unstoppable force. And now they're starting to get just enough, I think, from your Kayla Kings, from your Matilda X, you know, of Louisville over the weekend, it was Carly Wenzel. Like they don't need to score 20 points, but if two or three of them can score like 6, 8, 9 points apiece, then I think that brings Virginia Tech to a whole nother level, given how well the two superstars are playing.
Absolutely. And I think that's what they were trying to figure out early on in the season, especially in some of those bigger games, a little bit like Indiana, where they were taking care of business, but some of those bigger games that they weren't showing up in the same way against Iowa, against LSU. And now they're starting to piece that together. And then you throw in, like you said, Elizabeth Kitley, who is one of those players, you just kind of know what's coming and you can't stop it. You know, she's whatever, 8 feet tall, and she's going to hit you with that fadeaway. And what are you going to do about it? It's going in. Yeah. So when you have that and then Georgia Amore gets playing off that, it's a really tough beast to stop.
I think the whole year, if you had asked me who's the best team in the conference, I would have said NC State until probably last week. And NC State lost last night to North Carolina. Heels kind of led throughout, never put it away until the fourth quarter, win by 10. I think I finally figured out my thoughts on the Wolfpack. They're very good offensively, but they're not elite elite. They're very good defensively, but again, they're just not elite elite. So that means your floor is super high because most nights, one, if not both, are going to show up. But since I just don't think they have the ceiling of some of these other top 10 teams, that I think at the end of the day, like, they can go cold just enough where I'm concerned, or they can give up 80 like they did last night just enough where I think, like, can they put it together for 4 games in a row, for 5 games in a row, 6 games in a row, and I think I'm not there.
Yeah, you know, I agree with that take about they're very balanced in terms of their offense and their defense, no question. And that's going to be the question for them when it comes to March, and really when it comes to the ACC tournament too. I think we're going to get a good feel for whether your take is right or not before we even get into the NCAA tournament, because we're going to get to see them play in this back-to-back-to-back scenario against good teams. You know, some of these conference tournaments, you're really not going to face anyone of your caliber, anyone who can knock you off until either the championship or the Final Four. In NC State's case, in the ACC tournament, like we said, you're talking about, what, 7, 8, 9 teams who can beat anybody on any given night. So it's going to be an all-out war from day one of that tournament. We're going to see how they fare in this back-to-back-to-back scenario, and if they can be consistent and show up day after day, you know, throughout the week or throughout the weekend. And if they prove that they can, then yeah, this is a dangerous team in March, no question. And this is a team probably not going to get upset in the first weekend, but do they have potential to go in and pull an upset later in the tournament if they play like a South Carolina, for example? I don't know. That would be a fun matchup with the Sinai Rivers angle, but I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question.
Just pulled up the ACC bracket. Right now, NC State would be the 3 seed. If they were to play the 6 seed in the quarterfinals, it'd be North Carolina. Just beat them last night. Squeaked by. They were able to squeak by the Tar Heels at home last month. So, yeah, you're right. ACC tournament. Of all the tournaments, Megan and I will break them down in a couple weeks. I think this one has the most chaos potential. I think it's the most fun of the tournaments because Big Ten's probably up there too. But as we move to some of these other conferences, like, no one can compare, I think, to just the sheer number of teams in the ACC. I mean, what are your takes on Syracuse, who, I don't want to say laid an egg last night. They may have been in line come next week to be a top 16 team. Probably won't now after the loss. But that's a team that, like, they're in second place in the conference. And, you know, we talk about Virginia Tech, we talk about NC State, we talk about Hannah Hidalgo with Notre Dame and all these exciting teams and players. And then Syracuse, all year, just been chilling there. Second place, pretty much. Do you have takes on the Orange? Thoughts?
Yeah, and the exciting players that you just mentioned, we talked about. Another one that we probably don't talk about enough is De'Asia Fair. She's averaging 22 points a game, and she's actually, I didn't even look if she moved into fifth yesterday.
She did. Yep, fifth place in the all-time scoring list.
Fifth place, yeah. We talk about Caitlin Clark moving into first, rightfully so. We got another top five player active right now that isn't getting enough love for it. And I think people need to give De'Asia Fair some flowers because she's obviously one of the best scorers of all time. Transferred from Buffalo a couple years ago, followed Coach Felicia Legit Jack here from Buffalo to Syracuse, who is another new coach year two who's done an outstanding job. And she has really carried this team. There's talent around her, no question. But what she's done, and at her size too, I think she's 5'5", I want to say, against a power conference gauntlet of a slate that you see in the ACC and the defenses that teams throw at her, it's remarkable to watch what she's been able to do. And she's another player who can really get going. Some of the greatest March runs that we ever see are not, the most memorable ones that you can think of throughout the years are not even necessarily a team really coming together. Sometimes it is, but sometimes it's a player just decides I'm going to be legendary for like three straight weeks. And De'Asia Fair is certainly one of those. Yeah, exactly. She's certainly one of those players who could go on a run like that.
I think what's most impressive, how many times now in this new portal era have we seen mid-major player scores a bunch and pick your mid-major conference, goes to the power conference, and not to say they're bad players, but they're not putting up nearly the numbers that they were at their previous school. I mean, even, I don't want to pick on her, she leads the team in scoring. Kiki Jefferson averaged, 24-ish a game last year at JMU, dipped down to 13 this year for the Cardinals. Still, even that, she's probably their best player. But to be able to maintain that level of 22 a night on average for Fair, that's something that I don't think is appreciated enough, because the step up in competition, especially in the ACC, where sure you have your Wakes, your Pitts, your Boston Colleges, but outside of that, you're playing eight other tournament teams more often than not. Speaking of tournament teams, Miami probably still in. I looked at Megan's bracketology yesterday, still in as a 9 seed. Don't lose by 17 at Virginia. Bad loss for the ACC, who still, they're going to get 8 bids in.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Anything else from yesterday in particular? Oh, yes. Pac-12 never plays on Thursdays, so I overlooked it. Initially, UCLA looks like UCLA again after what they did to Utah last night.
Yeah, that is the game I did get back in time to watch, and Lauren Betts being back is a huge deal for them. Pac-12 never plays on Thursdays. They also seem to never have blowouts like this among the top six or seven. Obviously, you get down to your Oregon's, your Arizona States, it's a different story, but the Pac-12 is got a little bit of ACC, just not quite as deep. But when you look at the top half of the conference, I mean, these are all teams who have spent some time in the top 10, top 15 this year. And we see, how many games have we seen? Overtime, last second. So I was a little bit surprised to see Utah kind of get run out of the gym the way they did. But you're right. The story is UCLA, Lauren Betts missed some time. Obviously, UCLA got up to their highest ranking in school history at one point, number 2. Fell off a little bit with Lauren Betts back now and kind of has her feet under her and looking like she did early in the season. This is another one of those teams that could absolutely compete right there in that next tier below South Carolina for a Final Four spot.
5 losses already. They play Colorado, obviously, next. I don't know who they close with. All right, the Arizona schools. So thinking maybe 1. Maybe 2 more losses. 7 probably is too many to justify them as a 1 seed. But boy, that could be a scary 2 seed, because I think at their peak, which it looks like they're starting to refine that form, they're as healthy now as they're going to be, barring some sort of setback with anyone. I think their ceiling is higher than anyone not named South Carolina, just for that, Kiki Rice outside, Chrisma Osborne, veteran experience. Lauren Betts, sure, just a sophomore, just like Rice. So dominant down low. Stanford, I think, is the only team that can hit that peak in the Pac-12 with the way UCLA is playing right now. Utah, meanwhile, what are they in her HoopStats composite ranking? They've now dipped down to 9. They're still 9th in the composite rankings. The metrics love them. I think they've been one of the bigger disappointments this year, just given the expectations. Alyssa Pelley's great, don't get me wrong, and they just haven't reached the heights of last year. Still time, obviously, but I think that they're one of the more disappointing teams from the preseason.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, they're a team that still has that ceiling of, say, those top teams in the Pac-12 that you talk about. And on the best night, Utah looks like nobody can beat them. This team is one of three teams to stay within single digits of South Carolina. So we can talk about their ceiling and the metrics that love them might be right. But when you look at their floor, like what we saw last night, they have a floor that is very concerning if you're a Utah fan. And, you know, you have to talk about when you look at what they were last year and we expected them to take a step up and maybe they haven't. They've even stepped back. Obviously, you have to talk about Gianna Neepkins, who they lost to injury early in the season. And then last night, Jenna Johnson left the game in the middle of the game. And so we'll see if she comes back for their next game. I think she got stitches, I heard someone say. So it sounds like it wasn't any type of serious injury. But obviously, last night they were playing even more shorthanded, but still, 30 points is 30 points. So,
yeah.
Granted, when you look at their front court, it's not big and it's not deep. So when you lose your center, who's 6'2 and already giving up 5 inches to Lauren Betts anyway, you're going to have some problems. Like I said, hopefully she comes back for them. And I do think this is a team that on the right night can compete with basically anybody in the country. But on the wrong night,
UCLA earlier,
they did. Exactly. And like we said, competed with South Carolina. But on the wrong night, this could be a team that exits in round two.
Top of the Pac-12. Actually, you know what? Talk about these close games. Let's rewind 1 week. We had Scott Ruick on the show, head coach of Oregon State. We talked to him last Thursday. And then last Friday, while we're talking UCLA, finish of the year in college basketball, men or women's. That final, you didn't even need to watch the first 39 minutes and 50 seconds. The last 10 seconds of Oregon State UCLA, phenomenal theater. If you're not a fan of advancing the ball, just watch the 3-minute videos that are going around on social media and tell me you don't like advancing the ball. That was great.
That's exactly what I was going to say, Rob, is that anybody who is trying to convince someone else of the timeout advance the ball rule needs to just clip that 10 seconds and send it to him. And that's your argument. That case closed. But you're right. This is exactly what I was talking about. It feels like any Pac-12 game that doesn't go to overtime between this top half finishes in some sort of fashion like this game. And it was game winner. No, wait. No, it wasn't, because we got another game winner over here. No, wait. But then we got another one over here. But we're still not done. We saw basically 4 game winners in the last 10 seconds of this game. I wish we had, you know, usually I'm like the guy who nerds out on the stats and looks stuff up. I don't actually know how to look this one up, but I wish we had like a whole stats team that could look this up for us. What's the most lead changes in a game in the last 8 seconds? Because 4 lead changes in 8 seconds.
Yeah, that's,
you just don't see it. You just don't see it. It was, like you said, the game of the year.
Reagan Beers did exit that game, and then she didn't play on Sunday in Oregon State's loss at home to USC. That's kind of an ugly game. 58-50. I love the Beavers. I take pretty much no merit in Sunday's loss. Sure, bad shooting night for pretty much everyone. Assuming Reagan Beers comes back, if not this weekend, I haven't actually looked up her status, but as long as she's back for the tournament, I think the Beavers, I don't know if they're at the Stanford and peak UCLA level on a neutral floor. Obviously at home, it's different, but on a neutral floor, Pac-12 tournament, NCAA tournament, whatever, I don't think it's as high, but boy, I still think maybe last week was the wake-up call because everyone saw it. I think last week might have been the wake-up call that, yes, Oregon State isn't just a fluke team that had a couple of nice weekends. This is, I think, one of the probably 7 or 8 best teams in the country.
Yeah, when they're healthy, when Beers comes back, and they still have Talia Von Olhoff, and who hit the last game winner. I think she hit both for Oregon State. Obviously, yes. who can really do some great things, and we've seen her step up a lot. But Reagan Beers to your point about the status, I don't know her status for this weekend either, but she has a broken nose. I've seen that she's
broken nose day to day, may or may not play, according to what I just read.
If she does play, probably going to have the mask. So I hope we get to see her this weekend, regardless if we see her this weekend or next weekend. I think we're going to get to see masked Reagan Beers. And sometimes, I don't know what it is. I feel like sometimes players, when they got the mask, just go off. I don't even know if it's true. Yeah, exactly. It's like the superhero mask. So I feel like Reagan Beers going to come back, whether it's tonight, later this weekend, next weekend, 30 piece, first game in the mask.
You heard it here. They did come off a loss to USC. Juju is great. Don't get me wrong. This isn't bashing one of the 10 best players in the country as a freshman. She kind of had the night they won, so I also can't criticize it too much. She had a kind of night that people think Caitlin Clark has all the time, in that one assist, 6 of 32. That's the part that concerns me about USC, even in a win, is that when she has an off night, the difference is Caitlin Clark had 9 assists last night. I understand they lost, and 10 rebounds. Juju is 6 of 32. Like, where's anything else coming from with this USC team?
Yeah, they're going to need Mackenzie Forbes, obviously, to step up on those nights. And it was really their defense that carried them to the win, like you said, 58-50. But, to be in Juju's defense, like, Caitlin Clark probably had more of those nights her freshman year than she did.
Yeah, that's fair.
And so, you know, she's just getting started. I think Juju's going to be the best player in the country maybe as soon as next year, assuming Caitlin Clark comes out. But the fact that USC is able to win on nights even when she doesn't have it, because when she does have it, forget it. When she dropped 51 on the road at Stanford, which is about as good of a scoring performance as you're ever going to see from a freshman, maybe from any player ever, considering the context, who you're playing, where you're playing. When she has it, like nights like that, forget it. It's over. So for USC to be able to dig down on defense and find enough to get a win over a very good, although, like you said, shorthanded Oregon State team, even on a night when Juju doesn't have it, I think says a lot about this team. And I think it is a good defensive team. I think that's the thing with Juju, too, that is different from Caitlin Clark, and especially from freshman year Caitlin Clark, because we've seen her develop, obviously, is the defense. I think Juju has come in and already, as a freshman, been a very, very good defender and someone who probably doesn't get as much love for her defense because she drops 30 all the time, drops 50 on Stanford, has these crazy shooting nights. But even on an off night, she's going to bring it on the defensive end. I believe she's on the top 15 watch list for Defensive Player of the Year, if I remember correctly. Might be wrong about that. I need to go back and check that. But that's definitely someone who – Juju's definitely someone who can – give you contributions even when her sort of offensive box score that you read off there doesn't look very pretty.
Yeah, and you know, she doesn't have the gaudy steals numbers that like Hannah Hidalgo has, another freshman who comes in and
no one does.
Hannah's right, exactly. Plays phenomenal defense, so that probably
lead in the country. So
I mean, it's hard to not lead in the country when you have 120 something steals and it's mid February. It's wild. Stanford, we haven't talked really Stanford. They can wrap up a share of the Pac-12 this weekend with a couple of wins. That two-headed monster of Brink and Arifan, they're probably going to go to Vegas winners of 10 in a row. At the very least 9 of 10, they do have to go to Oregon State next week. But, you know, we're spending all this time looking at all these newcomers the past few years. UCLA's on the rise. USC's on the rise. Oregon State is back after a down year. We talked about Utah. All these great teams, and at the end of the day, there's Stanford at the top. Like, once again, it's almost like we take it for granted.
It does feel like that, doesn't it? And, you know, part of it is that the Pac-12, 2 through, say, 7, has stepped up so much this year in its swan song that there's so much more attention going around to the UCLAs and the Jujus in Colorado, who we haven't even talked about. But in Oregon State, the list goes on. But Stanford is, if it's possible to quietly be as good as they are, they're kind of doing it. They're quietly still the best team among that group. They're quietly maybe the second best team in the country. I said maybe Ohio State is. I think Stanford's right there. I don't think number two is clear. Stanford, obviously top four at worst. And they're quietly a team that, you know, and maybe it's not that quiet. I mean, Tara Vanderveer getting a lot of attention, obviously, for having the most wins all time. Cameron Brink, you know, might be the defensive player of the year, leads the country in blocks, probably going to go number two overall in the WNBA draft. But in terms of how good they are and the attention that they've gotten in past years, it does feel in a weird way, almost a little under the radar to me. But yeah, this is absolutely a team. This is, I think, the highest ceiling, and honestly, I would probably say highest floor team in the Pac-12.
I've said this a couple of times. I'm worried about the guard play just in terms of the offensive production. Hannah Jump is fairly consistent, but yeah, Brink and Irfan, like, they've had enough off nights and they've had enough nights offensively where they're scoring in the 50s and 60s that I'm not going to say concerned. I just puts me on pause for a heartbeat. But I agree with you. I think it's Stanford and UCLA at the top. There's probably a slight, like a half step down, Oregon State, USC, Colorado, another step down, Utah. But if any of those six teams made a run to the Final Four, to the Elite Eight, heck, if multiple of them did, I wouldn't be surprised in the least. You know, by the way, who's in last place in the Pac-12?
Arizona State or Oregon?
Oregon, which is wild.
It's crazy. It's
wild. Like, they have the number one recruiting class in 2020, so they should all be seniors now, and none of them are there. Tina Pow-Pow, South Carolina, Sidney Parrish, Indiana, Kylie Watson's out with Notre Dame, Maddie Shears at Kentucky, Angela
Shelley, I think, was in that class, right?
She's at Nebraska. Hugo Leach is at UCLA. Like, you sit there and go, oh, it's easy for South Carolina and UConn and Stanford because they get all the best players. It's like, getting all the best players is only half the battle.
Yeah,
like a third of the battle. Yeah, keeping them. One, yeah, in this era, keeping them. And then two, developing them. Like, Oregon had the number two recruiting class in 2022. So Chance Gray still there. Grace Van Sluten still there. Just not to knock Oregon. I, you know, love the people in Eugene, great relationships with them, but just goes to show you like what these top teams do every year. South Carolina, UConn, Stanford, what Tennessee used to do. Like, it's more than just getting the best players. And it's so much harder than just going out and getting next year Sarah Strong or whomever that is still undeclared. Like, just goes to show. Yeah, Oregon was on top of the world 4 years ago, and now they're at the bottom of the Pac-12. Like, it can happen that quickly, and it just makes what a team like South Carolina, as we can transition to the SEC, does all the more impressive, because I thought Alabama might maybe give them a game for a little bit, and it was like 6-4 early in the first quarter, and then turned it off by halftime, because South Carolina, SEC champions once again. How do you beat the Gamecocks?
Well, first off, about South Carolina and Dawn Staley, to your point, like, this is what this is why Dawn Staley is the best coach in the country, why she's going to be the runaway coach of the year, or she should be, is because of what you just said in terms of keeping players and developing players. When you look at this roster, obviously you have Tahina Pow-Pow, who you mentioned from Oregon. She's a transfer. Malaysia Fulwiley, coming off the bench, freshman. The rest of these players are sort of homegrown, developed. They were on the roster. And so people look at South Carolina last year and you say, okay, you lose the whole starting lineup to the WNBA. You're not going to be the best team anymore. You're still going to be good. Maybe you're going to be the eighth best team, whatever they were ranked in the preseason. But you had this whole entire bench of elite talent that was just ready to go. And the difference between Dawn Staley and everybody else is that Dawn Staley is such a coach that everyone wants to play for because of the relationships that she develops, that all of these talented freshmen and sophomores who are sitting behind Aaliyah Boston, who are sitting behind Bria Beal, stay. They don't all go decide, I want more playing time, I'm going to go somewhere else because I don't want to come off the bench. They say, we're going to trust the process. We're going to be the focal point by the time we're junior, senior. And now look at how it's paying off for Camila Cardoso. Obviously, she transferred in a few years ago, but Bree Hall, Ashlyn Watkins, Chloe Kitts, it's paying off. They're all putting up numbers and they're all winning. So what Dawn Staley does in terms of building those relationships and convincing players to stay and really developing them, even when they're coming off the bench and not getting a lot of playing time early in their career, I think is the thing that separates her from everyone else. But to your question about how to beat them, you got to have depth, because South Carolina is one of those teams outside of last night where, like you said, game was over at halftime. More often than not, it's actually not. When you look at South Carolina's scores, they really actually turn it on in the third or especially fourth quarter in a lot of their games. You see a lot of games where it's a single-digit game at halftime, they win by 30. And that's because they wear you down. Again, this depth that they have, they always have so much depth. And for 40 minutes, by the time you get to minute number 35, they are still fresh. They are so much better than you and so much more ready to go than you in the fourth quarter. So you got to have depth. That's number one. Got to be able to play for 40 minutes. And you have to box out because South Carolina is so relentless on the offensive glass. The three games that they've had this year that were in single digits, like we said, Utah was one of them, LSU, and then I'm drawing a blank on what the other one was right now. Those three teams got at least two-thirds of their rebounds on the defensive end. Most teams don't do that. Who was it?
North Carolina.
That's right, North Carolina, yeah. Those three teams all rebounded on the defensive end. Most teams don't against South Carolina. And so that is a critical – and most of the time, if you're deep and you box out, you're still not going to win. But if you want to have any chance, that's what you have to do.
I think I said this last week, like – 9 times out of 10, they can play exactly the way they want to and just bully you for 40 minutes and they'll win by 30 like they did last night. But what makes them scarier now, which I don't think they had as much last year, like if they need to make 8 threes in a game, they now have that capability with Pau Pau and Hall. Like Chloe Kitts is able to shoot a little bit. Full Wiley can come off the bench, shoot a little bit. Tessa Johnson is a good 3-point shooter. That added dimension now. It's like, all right, we can maybe like keep up for the most part and handle it down low. And then it's like, okay, well, now we're going to give up 7-8 threes. Well, all right, hat tip. To go back to your point on keeping players, I think Letitia Amihir is the perfect example. For every year since she was a freshman, I was waiting for her to transfer, and she just never did because I thought she was All-American caliber, and she was just stuck behind Aaliyah Boston, and then Camila Cardoso comes in, first option off the bench. She's a top 10 WNBA draft pick who chose to stay for 4 years and super efficient in the 20 minutes a game that she'd get. She stuck around and got a ring and got drafted. And I think like she's kind of the poster child for what Dawn Staley and the culture that she's trying to build, and proof for your Bree Halls, your Chloe Kitts, who was an early enrollee last year, your Ashlyn Watkins. Like, yeah, stick around. Even if you don't get 35 minutes like you could get at pick SEC or power school here, you have a chance to win a ring, and people will know if you're good, even if you get fewer minutes because you're just part of a better team. Anyone else in the SEC, like LSU, we can talk about them, but any of these middle tier teams, like Megan and I have kind of dismissed a lot of the conference for the most part. Tennessee, I think, is okay. Alabama's okay. Ole Miss couldn't really build off that momentum from last year's Sweet 16 run. Like any of these middle of the pack SEC teams do anything for you? Because to be honest, like, I see a number of tournament teams. I don't see more than maybe 2 or 3 second weekend teams.
No, I mean, South Carolina, obviously Final Four team. LSU, definitely a second weekend team. After that, I think LSU is in a tier of their own. They're clearly not number one. They're clearly not number three. Then you look past that. If there is going to be another second weekend team, people who have listened to me on podcasts for a while are going to be very surprised by this because I've thrown as much shade on this team as you have at Nebraska. But I do think, fair. I've thrown shade much more than once at
the rest
this
of it's
team,
just,
but I do
just
think Tennessee. Okay, I do think Tennessee can be a dangerous team. I'm not sure that they will make the second weekend, but I think they have that potential. I think they're playing better now. And obviously you have probably a lottery pick in Rickia Jackson. So in a lot of matchups, you're going to have the best player on the floor. And now they have the last few weeks, Tamari Key, who has started, I believe, the last 5 or 6 games, has really been working her way back this year from those scary blood clots that she had.
Yeah.
And was only playing 5, 6, 7 minutes a game off the bench for a while, was kind of ramping it up. And in these last couple of weeks, she's been able to play 15, 20, 25 minutes in a lot of these games and has finally been in the starting lineup. And I think she's been a big deal for them on the interior on both sides and someone who has really given them sort of another dimension when it comes to rim protection, when it comes to rebounding. things like that. And obviously, just basketball aside, it's great to see her, you know, healthy and thriving on the court again. But with her anchoring down low, this is a team who I think I'm not going to say that they're a second weekend team, but if you asked me, if you told me there's three SEC teams in the Sweet 16, you asked me who's the third one, I would say probably Tennessee.
Yeah, if there's an 8-9 seed, if you're a one seed, you don't want to see in the second round, like Tennessee's probably my answer. Obviously, we'll see how the bracket shakes out, but the team that I feel like, yeah, they no-showed at Alabama a couple weeks ago. That's really their only hiccup the last few weeks. Losing, like you said, against South Carolina, they hung with them for three quarters, couldn't quite do it for four, but you know, an impressive 11-point loss, if that exists. Big game this weekend against LSU. I think we'll learn a lot about the Lady Vols, who I think are safely in the field at this point, but have an opportunity to stamp a marquee victory against a Tigers team. Probably 3 weeks ago, I said I'm officially out on the Tigers. Turn the ball over too much. Don't play defense well enough. And they disappear from three too much for my liking. So I'm out on them. I want to hear your takes on a team that still, I mean, if they made the Final Four, I wouldn't be too shocked. But just what are your takes on the preseason number one that's just kind of been hanging out for a while now in that like 10 to 13 range in the polls?
Yeah, this is a team I think has a high ceiling for sure, and a Final Four ceiling because of the talent that they have. And sometimes the talent sort of finally rises to the expectations in March when it doesn't all year. Every now and then you see teams that do that. But your point that you made about disappearing from three is why I think they're also very vulnerable if they're not hitting that ceiling, because this is a team like in March, when you're playing a team that you're favored against, the best way to lose that game is to make no threes and have that team happen to have their best shooting night of the year on the night that they play you. And like we saw when LSU lost to Auburn, they made a grand total of zero threes,
zero,
which is almost unheard of in 2024, especially for a power conference team and a high level power conference team to make zero threes in an entire game. But that's what they did. And that opens up the door to teams playing you these different defenses that can really throw you off, especially when you don't have very much time to prepare in settings like March. And that's what we saw with Iowa, South Carolina last year in the Final Four, is that Iowa committed to this defense where they were going to wave off Raven Johnson. And it worked, and credit to Raven. She got in the gym, worked on her shot. She's a good shooter now. And like you said, South Carolina has a lot of shooters now, and you can't play them that way anymore. But in the Final Four last year, it worked. And you could see a team do what Auburn did to LSU. I think early in the tournament, they're not going to lose in the first round. But this is a team that if a team decides to really commit to – a pretty extreme defense against them and just force them to beat you from the outside, they might just not do it. They might just not be able to beat you from the outside. And if Angel Reese and Anissa Morrow aren't able to go for 30 and 15 each on that night, and the other team is hitting from the outside, you're vulnerable. So I definitely agree with you. I also think this is a team that on the right night can completely punish you on the boards and in the interior, and maybe there's nothing you can do about it if it's not the right matchup, if they get a team who doesn't have the size and the physicality to match up with that. But there are definitely teams who can beat them early in the tournament.
Last night's kind of a perfect example. They beat Auburn by five. Angel Reese, 25-20. They made two threes. They need some more, 5 points. They won. But again, Angel Reese can put up 25 and 20. But you make two threes and you don't get a little bit of help. Like Auburn outside the bubble, I think, somewhat comfortably. And this is a team that they've really struggled against twice. So I think there's a ceiling that I don't think any of us really expected LSU to have in the preseason. I will say they've started to move Haley Van Lith off the ball a little more. I think they've looked a little bit better since she stopped being the quote unquote point guard all the time. But that's been a weird fit all year, right? Like it hasn't seemed to click.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I think this is where we see, you know, not to get into it too deeply, but Dawn Staley is a better X's and O's coach than Kim Mulkey, just flat out. And Kim Mulkey was able to bring in a lot of talent, you know, and give her credit for that. But she has not – a lot of coaches would take the talent that LSU has, I think, and turn it into the best team in the country. And she just hasn't because, like you said, Haley Van Lith has been a weird fit with what they've tried to do. And I love Mikayla Williams. I think Mikayla Williams has been – awesome as them for
a freshman. She's kind of hidden because Juju and Hidalgo have been so good, but any other year she's probably a national freshman of the year.
Yeah, no question. And of course playing on a team with the star power around her doesn't help either in terms of her getting her shine. But at the end of the day, like, this is a team that shouldn't have the floor that they have, and they still, again, we saw them come within six of South Carolina. That's the closest I believe anyone's been to them. I think the Utah and North Carolina losses, I don't know if you have them up. I want to say they were 9-7, 8-9. So LSU came as close as anybody to beating South Carolina, and that's what I'm talking about with their ceiling. And if LSU went on another run to the Final Four, would I be surprised? Absolutely not. I think they can do that. But like you said, the fifth
loss in the second round, would you be like totally stunned at the same time?
No.
Right, exactly. No. Quickly, we're going a little long here. Do you trust anyone in the Big 12? Oklahoma is still in first, did lose last week. Texas is ranked in the top five. Anyone in the Big 12 that you think, that you trust to go on an Elite Eight Final Four type run in the Big 12?
I wouldn't put any Big 12 teams in the Final Four. If anyone's going to do it, I think it would still be Texas. And if they had Rory Harmon, I obviously would feel a lot more strongly about that. But Madison Booker has stepped up quite a bit since Rory Harmon went out on the offensive end in particular. I think, you know, we've seen Texas defense maybe have some lapses, especially in the last couple weeks or so here. And we know Vic Schaefer is a defensive coach, so he's, I'm sure, trying to figure that out as best as he can. Oklahoma is one who, if they made a deep run, it wouldn't necessarily shock me because of the way they play. I don't think they're like a top 16 team necessarily, although they have been very, very impressive in the last couple months after what was an extremely bad
loss to Southern.
Yes, I was going to say bad start to the season, including that loss. And they really turned it around and have actually been playing some semblance of defense lately, which is not a Jenny Baranchek staple like it is with Vic Schaefer. But the way that they run and shoot the three, that's the type of team where some nights they're just going to go 17 for 29 from three, and there's nothing you can do about it. And when that, if that happens, if they get hot in March, that's a team that it could really snowball. But I wouldn't say I trust them to go on an Elite Eight Final Four run. Texas a little bit more, but still probably not. I think the Pac-12, we could see the Pac-12 had three Elite Eight teams and the Big 12 had none. Maybe the Pac-12 has three and the Big 12 has one. I definitely think this team, and Kansas State is another one when they're healthy, when Ayoka Lee is out there. I do think they have that potential as well to go on a deep run. We saw them get up to number two in the rankings earlier this year. But obviously we've seen them exposed a little bit in the last couple weeks as well. So it is, Big 12 is kind of tough to figure out.
Yeah. Texas, they force 20 turnovers a game. They get like 40% of their offensive rebounds. That travels. So if someone is going to go on a run, I think it's the Longhorns. I also think I'm out on K-State. I think they burned, their star burned brightly a little too soon. Like, I think they peaked last month. Ayoka Lee is back. I'll give her, you know, it's fine. She showed rust against UCF, but still, they should be able to handle
UCF. Well, she didn't
UCF
play in that UCF game, actually. She missed, she had an ankle injury, so she missed that game.
The one
she
on
came
Sunday?
Back. I believe it was Sunday. Yeah, she came back for a game and then got hurt again, missed the UCF game, then came back again in the last game. So the UCF game, although I think even without Ayoka Lee, beating UCF by two was mildly concerning if you're a Kansas State fan. Right. I think you should be able to beat them by more than two even without her, but she did miss that game.
That's right. That she, I was thinking of the first game back earlier in the week where she put up like 20 points, but it was inefficient in a win. So either way, if she's back, maybe that changes things. But at this point, it's getting late to not be 100%. So I think I'm out on K-State, and then I don't trust any of these other Big 12 teams to go on a massive run. Very quickly, UConn will win the Big East again. They're the number one seed. They'll clinch it this weekend when they go to DePaul. Paige Beckers, she's coming back next year. Any initial thoughts? And I think this is the first of, like, there's lots of people who could come back, and we don't know anything outside of Beckers coming back. I don't see Caitlin Clark coming back. I don't see Cameron Brink coming back. I think this might be the most high-profile one that we get that's coming back for next year.
I agree. Most high-profile. I think this was the least surprising as well, because Paige had sort of hinted at it already, and then when AZ Fudd got hurt, you knew that they wanted to play a full year together.
You know how many games they played together? They've been on the same roster for 3 years.
17?
Look at you.
Is that the answer?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, continue. I interrupted you.
It's not enough. And I mean, that's like half of a season total. And they've been on the same roster, what, 3 or 4 years now?
Three years.
And they haven't even played a full equivalent of a year together. So that one was not as surprising. I would definitely be much more surprised if Caitlin Clark came back. Her boyfriend, Connor McCaffrey, works for the Pacers, and I think she's done all that she wants to do at Iowa at this point, other than maybe win a national championship, which we'll see if that happens. Cameron Brink, same deal. I think she's out. But again, no one would shock me because of how NIL works and how the sort of resources are at the high-level Division I compared to WNBA. Like, you're giving up charter flights, this and that. There are some reasons to come back. So nothing would shock me necessarily, but I do definitely lean with you that these other high-profile players are probably coming out and pay. We'll see someone who's maybe a first-rounder, projected first-rounder, come back to school, but no one as high-profile as Paige.
Like, honestly, I think that the next high-profile player that I'm curious about and I think might stay is Aliyah Edwards, to be perfectly honest. Like, if Paige is coming back and AZ Fudd comes back healthy, which admittedly, she hasn't been healthy since her junior year of high school consistently. But she's the one I think be on the fence about whether she comes back. Last question for you. Today's a big day. I live in Winston-Salem. Institution in Winston-Salem, the Pancake Jamboree. We do it every year within our office. If you follow the college baseball version of CSN, the 3D show, Kyle Schasburger, won in 2022. Was upended last year by someone in our office. Question for you. This jamboree, we go across the street. It's with one ticket, all you can eat pancakes and sausage. Money is no object, Calvin Wetzel. How many pancakes can you down? And you have 6:30 a.m. p.m. So you can go whenever you want and stay as long as you want. How many are you down?
Talking about like normal size.
I want to say that. Yeah, like the size of like a dessert plate size. And they're not overly thick.
I gotcha. Okay. Oh, that's a good question. Are we assuming that I don't care how I feel the next day?
Yes. And you go in knowing, all right, I need to maybe like skip breakfast because I'm going to go and house some pancakes.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. I'm going to say, I would hate myself later for sure. But, you know, if there was something on the line and I was winning something, or I had a reason to do this, I think I would be capable of maybe putting up like a 30 ball, I'll say.
30? Wow.
I think I could do it. I think I might throw up later, but I think I could do it.
I mean, this is
not
a hot
fast.
Dog contest,
I wouldn't
man.
Do it fast. Like, I'm not a speed eater, to be clear.
Oh, that's fine. This isn't a hot dog contest.
We're not Kobayashi-ing these things.
Yeah, if you puke and rally, like, keep going, man. Yeah, no rules here. That is spectacular. Calvin, had a lot of fun. Thank you for filling in for Megan. Tell us, where can we find you? Where can we hear you? Where can we read you? You can follow him on Twitter at CWetzel31.
Yeah, so that's where I'm at on social media. I have a podcast regularly with Her Hoop Stats once a week. with Karina Mustafa, who does an excellent job. It's called Coast to Coast. So tune into that. And then just
WNBA content too there, right?
Yeah, WNBA, college, the whole deal. Even cover a little bit probably international when we get into the Olympics. So just women's basketball all year round on there. And yeah, whatever content I'm putting out through Her Hoop Stats, go follow.
Yeah, good stuff. Games this weekend, USC Colorado tonight, USC Utah on Sunday. If you like Creighton Villanova tomorrow, and then LSU Tennessee to highlight the weekend. Megan will be back next week, where it'll be March when we talk. So enjoy the final week of February. Talk to you next week.